Blog Talk Radio.
Yes. I'm so pleased to have with us as our indicated part of our outstanding community leader, Mr. Olu Jabari. Olu, we're so glad to have you.
Good afternoon. It's good to be a part of your show.
Great. So, Olu, give us a little background about your experience in the area of dealing with race and racism.
Well, you know, this started some time ago. I know you and I have been friends for almost 20 years or more. But prior to that, I've had my run-ins with race relations, not just growing up, but as an adult as well, being profiled as a black man.
Wow. And you talk about the profile of the black man. You talk about the image that has been preconceived as a notion based upon what the media has promoted.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this goes back when I was with the Detroit police. And I was profiled, and I was an officer, and they didn't know it, but I was in a predominantly white community doing some shopping, and they said it was a black man about 6 foot one who had stolen some items out of a Target.
Wait a minute. Hold on. You are an officiating officer of the law. And they identified you as a potential criminal.
Correct. I was in Chesterfield, Michigan, and I had recently moved, and I was on the Detroit Police Reserve as an inspector, and coming out the store on a Sunday, dressed up in a suit, and I guess, of course, that doesn't matter because of the color of my skin.
So what was the whole synopsis of the situation that occurred?
Can you hear me pretty good there?
Yes, I hear you very well.
Okay. You were asking what was the synopsis of the situation?
Yes.
Well, real short and brief, the synopsis was I followed orders. I didn't ask any questions. And I waited until they ran my name. And my badge number came up. And they said, oh, you're fine. You can go. And I said, no, give me a ticket. Give me what you're going to give me. Because after today, we can leave together and we can file this complaint.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what was the outcome behind that? Because I know they were in a state of shock when they saw the fact that you were an officiating officer of the law. It was probably the biggest shock that they had in their career.
Well, absolutely. Because I was black, made it a case. But like you said, when they saw the badge number come up, it was mistaken identity all of a sudden. And I told them I would wait for supervision to show up, and we can go and file a complaint, because it's just not easy to allow me to leave because I have a badge number.
So after you went through it, I know you as being that diligent leader that you are, filed that complaint. I know it was all systems go after that.
Oh, yeah. I was being watched, and, you know, I noticed that they came around a little bit more. They started being a little nicer to me, but I'm one out of a billion black men that's probably, you know, this has happened to, and all of a sudden it's okay. But it's not okay. Because I represent the black race.
That's right. You represent it well. And then the whole synopsis of what happened was that they profiled the wrong person. Because when they found out who you were, all of a sudden you get the preferential treatment.
Exactly. And this goes back to when you and I have been teaching in the schools, and you were a motivator for young black men and young black women. And I was coming around, you know, trying to make sure that those young black boys had an opportunity. All of this comes out of that experience of being positive and being around positive people.
That's right. That's right. And you have done that so very well as being a business owner. This is another credential under your belt. Not only being a previous officer of the law, being a small business owner. You really break the mold of what they have predefined as being the character of the black man.
Absolutely. I've been a business owner for the last 20 years. And my business now is in Sterling Heights. But it started out in Detroit, which is where I was born and raised, and I still respect it.
Wow. And you represent Detroit so well, totally outside the mold of what they have preconceived as a notion for the black man in Detroit. And seeing all of your accomplishments and knowing your affiliation, what is at this present time, because we can go all the way back to 1955 to Emmett Till, all the way up to Mr. Floyd. That's the most recent. We just added on another statistic on the list. Miss Priscilla Slager, arrested in Harper Woods in the police department, but not defined why she was arrested. What was the reason? What was the suspicion for her arrest? What was the evidence? And this young lady, 38 years of age, died while in custody.
Yeah, I had a chance to hear about that and check out the march. And I was in, I was on two other marches. That's something. Dealing with my people, young black men and women. Again, it goes back, sister, to that skin color. And the bottom line, if you don't have the complexion, you don't have a connection.
I like
so that's basically it. The chain has not been unbroken. And it's not about where you stay or how much money you have or what you drive. The color of your skin reflects a different portrait when it comes to law.
And that is just a terrible but truthful perspective with law enforcement today. Because we never hear these incidents happening amongst the Caucasian, amongst the Asian, amongst the Hispanic community. It's always the African American.
This is more than true. You and I know if we're pulled over, you can't say what you want and get away with it. But if you with somebody that's Caucasian, that's white, or their persuasion, they'll say whatever they want and get a slap on the wrist.
That's right. And the slap on the wrist is so slight and minuscule, there's no evidence of any degree of connection at all, of any degree of impact at all. But the moment that a person of ethnicity, as you stated, Olu, has one thing that is contrary to what has been stated, it becomes a criticality in which that individual either comes up seriously hurt or either dies while in custody. Under law enforcement, we're supposed to be protected by law enforcement.
Now, all of this is right. You're on point. And you've always been that way. And I've been asked, as a state representative going in soon, what do we do?
That's right. What do we
do? We got to talk about those 4 R's. We got to review what's going on. Reveal it. Reevaluate it. And then reform it.
All right. I like that. The 4 R perspective. Say it one more time, Olu.
Absolutely. We got to review what's going on in the department. We got to reveal it to everybody in the nation. Then we got to reevaluate how we got here. And then we got to reform it.
reform it. Very good. So, Olu, in your most picturesque interpretation, as I know you already have mapped out the strategic environment of how this needs to be done, where do we start? Where do we start as citizens, as movers and shakers in today's society? Where do we start? Where do we start?
Well, we have to start at the federal legislation by giving local people the means of making these decisions. That's the problem, is that it's made at a federal and a national level, and it took away the local means of interpreting what the law should be for their communities.
That's right. That's right. I agree. I agree. And the same since you said that, Olu, to add on to what you said, support what you said, because when it comes to the municipalities, there's no connectivity at all to those associations in the upper echelon of government. There's no connectivity.
That's absolutely right. And that is the reason why we have a lot of problems. One of the issues is that the police departments, the national level, the federal level, they don't share the community's voice, the value, or the vision.
No.
They share what's been told to them to do, so there's no sensitivity or empathy of how to do the job.
Oh, I agree. That's powerful.
It's no way you can tell me yourself that I live in a predominantly black community, and you're going to put a cop that lives in Dearborn and is white in my community?
No.
He don't have no connection with people?
That's right.
So he's already afraid.
Yes. You're right. He's already afraid. And all he knows about the African-American community is based upon what he sees projected in the media.
Absolutely. He's in survival mode. I would be the same way, sister, if you put me in Dearborn. I live in Detroit, and now I have to go out there every day. I'm a black man.
Yes.
I'm a target.
That's right.
So we have to get back. I think a residency requirement might be part of what we need to do.
That's so that we can know our police officers. That's a very good component, residency component. That's right. Because who comes to assist and who comes to enforce should be someone, like you said, reflective of my community, of your community.
Absolutely. And all the stuff that you've done and you've been in, I know you very well. You've been around the community all throughout Detroit and surrounding cities preaching righteousness, not only to children, but youth and families. We have a lot of you out there, but here's the thing. You don't have no local control.
That's right.
So that's the problem. You got people who know the community, but you remove the control.
Yes. I absolutely agree with you that look at this current structure of how the district is now. Literally no community connectivity. Been broken, been severed. We're following a model that's not even reflective of who we are and what we represent.
And that's what our problem is. I mean, you and I can teach our babies, and it's all about saving the babies. If we don't save them, what is it all about? If we cannot connect with our own children, and they go to school, and excuse my language, but we got to have folks who look like us, who talk like us, but who are very educated that can uplift our children's spirit.
That's right.
We don't need anybody to be a savior.
No.
We have enough black African Americans that can do that.
That's right. That is so true, and that's missing. So the representation of the population needs to be intact. That's to me, that's the first level foundation piece that we need to develop that strategy with, what you said. And you give us number two, the second level of what needs to be done to make sure that we can combat this evil presence within our cities, because it's wreaking hell and havoc upon the African American community like nothing ever before. Everything banned. And this was really irritates me. And you're proud to be a Detroiter, Olu, and I'm proud to be a Detroiter. Everything bad relevant to Detroit. The highest level of COVID cases, what did they say? Detroit. The highest level considering the state of Michigan, HIV, Detroit. STD, Detroit. Crime, Detroit. Detroit gets the bad rap because of the skin complexion.
And I totally agree, and that's something else that I love to do once I get my position as a state representative. When we talk about Detroit, we have to think about lifting something away from folks that are taking a lot of the things that belong to Detroit, like Metro Detroit. What does Metro mean? Is it Metro when things are going right? Is it Metro when I can come downtown to the Fox?
All right.
Is it Metro when I can go to that nice, clean community right there on Kirchhoff and Van Dyke area? Is it Metro Detroit when I go right on Jefferson to Belle Isle Park? What is Metro? So it's Metro when it's all good.
Yes.
But when things are not going well, it's, well, that happened in Detroit. No, that's that happened in Metro Detroit.
Thank you. That's right. Well, they drop the Metro when it's not reflective and to their advantage.
Correct.
Correct.
That's terrible.
So we got to get away from that. If you're going to be part of Detroit, drop the Metro and deal with us as a real partner.
That's right. That's right. That's right. And Detroit has a lot of positive impact and has a lot of wonderful people, very committed people, but it's gotten the bad rap because of the media establishment and the preconceived notion and the racist rant that has translated throughout this nation with this current level of administration that's over the country.
You know, they want us to stand out as number one on a negative level.
Yes.
But they have not came and checked out our young black children. Look at this school where the babies are singing all on commercials and been all on TV. I forgot.
Yes.
I think it's the Detroit School Academy or something.
Yes.
That's just one school. Ms. Bell, how many schools have you been in and you touch hundreds and hundreds of lives every day?
Oh, yes. So many, Olu. I'm telling you, and those young people have shined brighter than any stellar constellation in the sky. They have progressed and become productive society associations that they need to be impacted upon. Like you said, they don't want to promote the positive and the productivity of the African-American community.
And that's part of our responsibility to make sure that it's not only promoted, but they see it, taste it, feel it, smell it, touch it. Because their thing is this, and you and I know this, as they continue to build jails, and continue to reform and reevaluate the good stuff, they're doing that for the bad stuff too.
Yes.
You know, they built jails consistently, underground, on top of the ground, in different areas.
That's right.
So who they going to fill them with? Black folks.
That's it.
So we've got to reverse this trend and say, hey, we see that, we understand that, but we're lawyers, we're doctors, we're architects. We built the world.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. We built the world. And you remind me so much of when you stated that, Olu, about what Michelle Obama stated about how her ancestors helped to build the White House.
Absolutely. We can't take that short.
The labor of slaves.
So, and that's still slavery today.
Yes, it is. And it's more sophisticated now. They sweep it under the rug. And they mandate it as a way of job requirement. Work above and beyond. Do more than the average Joe.
And I totally agree, but we've got to be more positive than that in order to make it. You know, there's a thing that says that we have to be twice as good and twice as black and twice as saying yes, ma'am, yes, sir, and everybody else. I don't think that's true. I think that we have to make sure they know who we are, whose we are, and where we're going.
Absolutely. That's right. That's right.
You know, we can't allow them to speak for us, sister. I don't do it. And I'm a proud Detroit. I was born and raised there. I went to Detroit Public Schools.
Yes.
And people like yourself and other folks around the city of Detroit helped me to be who I am.
That's right. That's
So they can't say nothing positive comes out of Detroit, because you're an example. I've been around you for a long time, and I know the last couple of years or decade we have not touched base, but just to hear your voice and see you in social media doing so many positive things, I was shocked.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And it has been a long, hard journey, I'm telling you, with the translation of so many things happening in the public school sector, to just discourage and disband the employees and disband the community, to disband and demoralize the community, to break down the students. There's a few of us that are yet standing because we see the wealth that dwells within Detroit. And thank God for people like you that have made us proud.
Well, I appreciate that, and I give all the honor to God. Most folks don't want to acknowledge the fact that God should come first in everything.
That's right.
And I always tell folks, if I can't bring God into my interview or into whatever I do, I don't need to be a part of your show. And as you and I know, a lot of folks are going to want us to do shows because of what we look like, and we're not supposed to have this type of intelligence.
That's right. That's right.
But I make sure that I let them know who I'm representing, where I'm from, and definitely you can't stop me from getting here.
That's right. That's right, because you've already arrived. And, Olu, you said such a powerful statement about giving God the glory and the honor. And I want to ask you this question and propose this to the listening audience. Where are these strong, astringent, mega pastor, leaders, self-proclaimed spiritual advisors, mediators, and great people who they proclaim to be? Where are they in the equation? I've heard very little or no comments, statements, have seen no orchestration or momentum addressing these areas of race and racism and inequality.
And that's a very good question. I know on social media, I put it out there. I said, calling all pastors, all ministers, all reverends, I'm calling you out. I need to meet with you. I need your help. This is the time for God's people to come together.
That's right.
Unfortunately, no one stepped up to the plate.
No, nobody.
Not a mega minister. Nobody from East Point, West Point, Grosse Point, South Point, Dearborn, Telegraph. But here's one thing. A few of them got together and wanted to sue our governor.
Yes.
And then I say, well, wait a minute. What about the doors being over? You're not getting no tithes? What about them tithes you got for them 20 years?
Yes, that's right. About the money, about the Benjamins. That's why they went after her.
That's right.
That was just a hypocritical example.
Yeah, there's no reciprocity or thank you for what she is doing. And, you know, I don't care at this point if she's white or black, but the thing about is she right or wrong, and she's been right.
She's been right. Yes, she has. She cares about all people.
And I still continue to call out ministers and churches. I haven't seen any say that we're open for COVID-19 testing.
Nope.
We want to help these babies learn in school, so we're going to open up.
Nope.
We're going to give out baskets every week because we collected $20 million last year. I ain't heard nothing.
Nothing. Nothing. They're sitting back on the sidelines waiting to get the hand sign, the approval to reopen so they can start collecting the Benjamins. This is a horrible reflection of the spiritual community or the self-proclaimed spiritual community.
I totally agree, and I think God's going to deal with that piece too.
Yes. And I see that as part of what you're talking about, developing a strategic plan with us. The congregations are missing in the equation of this.
No question. You got to remember the congregation is what makes up the church.
That's right.
And here's the problem with that is that when I can't collect no tithes and offerings, then it's a whole different concept and story.
That's right. That's right.
You know, when they should have been working together 10 years ago, there's no reason why we have over 4,600 churches in Detroit and one on every corner, and none of them can seem to work together.
None of them. That's right. That's right. And God is not divided. He's only one God.
Come on.
Isn't that something?
Yes,
they have caused division because of doctrinal differences, because of established organizational differences. There's only one Lord, one faith, and one baptism. If we want to take it there and bring it home, that's where it is. So where are they serving? Where's their faith?
That's
what level have they been baptized? That's right.
See,
what God are they serving? Why are they serving?
They're serving the face on the dollar bill, if I can say that.
That's
but,
right.
And my thing is this, as you mentioned, where are you serving? And my thing is, where is your, or who is your relationship with?
Thank you. That's right. The God of this world or the God that created the universe. And we know who the God of this system is. We know who he is.
Oh, yeah. Make no mistake about it. I can tell you one thing. If there's a handout to be gave out and churches could get it, watch how many will slap over to the left side and say, thank you, Mr. President, for that money. We really appreciate that. And for that, we're going to talk about getting you some votes.
That's right. That's right. And that's the undermining scheme in which is being utilized. That's right, to lure people in. Isn't that something? But they'd much rather be given that type of false information and association than being given the truth that, that things could turn around and take an evolutionary turn for the best.
Yeah, I agree. As we're protesting every week and every day, one place we need to be protesting is our churches.
Definitely, yes.
You know, young folks, you got these folks. I mean, when you create stuff in churches and say that, you're on the motherboard, you're a deacon, you're this. I don't need a title. God don't have a title.
No, he doesn't.
I'm here to work, and I need to make sure that you hold yourself responsible for being a minister or a pastor of God's word.
That's right. That's right.
And I think people are afraid to tell their pastors and ministers that you're not serving God, so I can't serve you.
Absolutely. That's right. That's right. And you remind me of the very words Apostle Paul said, follow me only as I follow Christ.
Wow.
See that? And they're following the system of this world. So that lets you know where they put their hope and their aspirations in.
Absolutely. Now, while we see that side of it, sister, there is a good side now.
Yes.
Because God is working through me, through you, and through other folks to bring this good news to people.
Yes.
I always say that God doesn't make a mistake. For him to shut down the whole world at the snap of a finger,
yeah,
it shows folks that you're not in charge.
That's right. That's right. You're not in charge. That's right. Like I said, they hid behind the mountain. Now that the mountains have been removed, now we see where they are, who they are, and what they can and can't do.
And that's a phenomenal perspective, because it doesn't matter how much money you got, where you live, who you with, what you drive, what school you go to, what type of education you have, and for the most part, what type of color you are.
That's right. That's right.
You shut it down.
Shut it down.
And I think that's what we had to get to, Sister Phelps, before we can realize that we have a lot of work to do, and that the work that you've done, I've done, and our ancestors before us was not in vain.
That's right. It's not in vain, not at all in vain. And I just love the way that you're expounding in those areas, Olu. You've given us definite structure that we can start building that paradigm to shift the very energy levels of what's happening and to create that positive and affluent environment that we as African Americans have so believed and attempted to structure over the eons of time. Deliberately, so we can say eons of time, because we have been perpetual throughout the centuries. We've tried to build a positive, affluent society. We've tried. And everything is that they hate Africans and blacks. Civilization originated from Africa.
Well,
the Garden of Eden from North Africa.
Well,
see, the very essence of society, democracy, came from Africa. The Romans tried to take credit for it, but it came from Africa. Everything that was great, that was created, came from Africa. Where's the Garden of Eden? North Africa.
I see, and they see too. They understand it. It ain't nothing new. They just don't want to acknowledge it.
They don't. And that's on the race of agenda, like you said, Olu. Fear has encapsulated them. That's another factor of why the elevation of racism, types of negativity and violence against blacks have elevated, because so many people of African-American ethnicity have progressed and become productive and literal role models in society that has reshaped the whole structure of the cultural bearings of our people, and that puts them in fear.
And I totally agree. And I think we have to get back. We got to have a plan.
Yes.
And that's why I decided that I've got to run for public office. I've got to do this, because the plan I have is simple.
Yes.
But it's called sample.
Sample.
And the way we do
that
is we
sample plan is, and just give us the whole influx of what your strategy is. You gave us two levels that you're going to be working on, and just roll the plan out for us.
Absolutely. It's called sample. The S is for seniors and veterans. We first have to get seniors and veterans to the table to lead us.
Yes.
The seniors have been there. The veterans have served.
Yes.
So that means that young folks like myself and you, and then our grandchildren and our children, they need to hear those stories about what happened.
Yes.
How we got to this point. To take them to a protest, that's fine. But if you don't explain where the first protest started at, how this didn't happen overnight. Show them the dogs and our leaders have been killed and sold and lynched and murdered and beat. Show them that. Explain it to them.
Yes.
So that's why seniors and veterans come in as the S.
Okay.
And then the A is advocacy for youth. You know, the youth have always been about my business and your business.
Yes.
They have to be at the table. No one should be speaking for them. Let them speak for themselves. The Bible talks about out of the mouth of babes.
Yes.
It talks about, you know, it's all about the children. Let the little children come to me.
Yes.
So we have to give them an opportunity to talk about what they want and what they need.
Yes.
So that's the A. And then the M, we got to deal with called mental illness. You and I have mental illness, Sister Self.
Yes.
We have a lot of damaged information in the back of our minds.
That's right.
And until we can get the right medication, which is God, Jesus, and folks who've been there, it's always going to hurt us.
That's right. That's right.
But on the outside of mental illness, we have a lot of folks walking around.
Yes.
You know, they've been shell-shocked as a veteran. They're homeless.
Yes.
They've been dumped to the side. They've been dumped out of jail. They've been kicked, spit on, and told that they were worthless.
Oh, yes.
But we have to build an institution for them. Because they're my brothers and sisters.
That's right.
Now, that don't have nothing to do with money.
No.
That's called common sense.
All right. All right.
And that's the M. Now, the P is something that you've done already. Policing community.
Oh, yes.
We got to get back to that. I remember Sister Felswin coming to the schools and Carstens and all the elementary schools over there. The police were in the school.
Yes, they were.
They were not carrying weapons.
No.
We have police cadet programs in elementary and middle schools. We made them hall monitors.
See?
The police were there to help the youth. They parked their car there, and that was their precinct for 8 hours a day.
See? Yes. Yes.
So, yeah. You got to involve them.
That's right. And that builds that relationship. Yes.
Say that again.
That builds the relationship for them being on site and the children get a relationship with them of intimacy, that they're there to do the positive good and to be an imputation in the school environment, as opposed to seeing them out in the community and seeing how they're brutalizing citizens, the children get scared and they regress and get away from them and are fearful. So that relationship has been severed.
And that's correct. You and I know, when you and I were in the schools, we could go to the schools, we knew the kids' names, we build relationships.
Yes.
Heck, we even had handshakes with the kids.
Yes, we have.
It was funny, but we had fun.
Yes, we did.
And we always had the same police officer.
Yes.
Guess what? Who looked like the kids that went to that school.
That's right.
So we got to get back to that. And then there's the L. The L is for something you and I have been doing all our lives. Building leaders.
Oh, yes.
That is the issue in politics. We don't have people to take our places. We don't have another Ms. Phelps coming up, another Olujabar. Who's going to take your place when you leave?
No, that's right.
Who's going to take my place?
No, nobody. Nobody.
So we got to build somebody so that they can continue to move this struggle forward.
Yes.
So the leadership in politics and in the community, we have not been building them up the right way.
That's true. I agree with that.
We got a lot of work to do on leadership.
A lot of work. Oh, my goodness.
Yes, and then the E is education.
Yes.
Education is the key to immigration, to systemic health problems, to employment, to policing, to politics, to home, you name it. If we educate our children and other folks who are coming into America, we can resolve most of the issues.
That's right.
Hands down.
That's right.
Now, I'm not talking about education just with a book. I'm talking about what you and I are talking about today, a roundtable discussion.
That's right.
That type of education.
That's right.
I need to know what you've been through, Sister Phelps, in your life. How did you get to live as long as you are without being battered and bruised? How did you do that? What did you do? What does it take? You have a story to tell.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
So I'm excited about what God is doing.
Oh, yes.
But we got work to do right here where we are. And it can't stop right now. You know, tell how long have you been doing this, Sister Phelps?
Oh, my goodness, since 1987.
Come on.
Yes, 1987. I've seen such a shifting in the paradigms of the community structure and the household and the educational system. It has been distressing. But the only thing, as you said, Olu, that keeps me grounded is the fact is that we've got to stand still and be able to build the momentum for the next level of leadership. And that's the only reason why I maintain the integrity of just staying anchored in the educational community, because it has been such a trial by fire, you know, and to see you trying to build up, and the moment you think you've built the momentum to elevate the next level of leaders, here comes another change and shift in the paradigm. It has been just difficult, and it's all like you said, because there's no connection, there's no dialogue, there's no communication, no connectivity, and when there's no relationship, there won't be any progress.
And I totally agree. You got to remember, Sister Phelps, everybody's got a story.
Yes.
And until we allow those stories to be heard, we cannot move forward.
That's right. That's right.
You know, these young girls, these young boys, I love them. God bless them.
Yes.
But we got to get them to the table and have them listen to your grandmother or your mother or your grandfather.
Yes.
And then you have to tell your story.
Yes.
So they can know. They know how successful you are. But how did you get there?
That's right.
What was your story?
That's right.
And that's what makes me, that's what makes you. I didn't do this. You didn't do that.
No.
The community built us up.
Yes.
and our parents and their parents. So we got to get back to that.
That's right.
And I tell folks, I'm running for state representative in Macomb County. Not only because I have to, because God said so.
That's right. That's right. Your leadership, your vision is so well needed. It's crucial. It's literally crucial.
I'm thankful. I have a job. I work for the government right now. Money is not what's pushing me. That's not a driving force.
Right.
When I can see somebody, Sister Self, pull their pants up. Because
yes.
I said, hey, brother, let me talk to you for a minute. That's all it's about.
That's right.
That's it. Or I can see somebody do what you did in 1995 and 1997. Take a community. Cut the grass. Paint
yes.
the curves.
Yes.
Serve lunches.
Yes.
Have a community program right there on the block.
Yes.
Everybody knew who you were and who you belonged to.
That's right. That's right.
So it wasn't no child abuse or child neglect because a parent snatched you up and said, hey, you know you're not supposed to do that.
No.
Where did that go? What happened to that?
Right. Right. See? It's missing. It's equation. And you know something, Olu, you are bringing forth a revelation that needs to be shared with the listening audience. You're talking about the village concept.
Yes.
The Marifa, the village. That's what's missing.
And it is. And we've got work to do. And I keep saying that. But this work gets easier when we all work together.
Yes.
There's an African proverb that says, promote your two tashinda.
Yes.
We all work together, and together we will win.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
So, Sister Phelps, you don't win if I don't make it, and I don't make it if you don't make it.
That's right. That's right.
That's what we got to get to.
That's what we got to get to. And in developing that plan, like you said, you're in Macomb County running for office, and you know, and having impact in Detroit. That's two areas at one time we were collaborating and connecting, because the people in Macomb County, as where we are, need to get to know the people in Wayne County, where Detroit is. They could be interfacing.
Well, the history is that wouldn't be a Macomb County if that wouldn't know Wayne County, Detroit.
That's right. I agree.
So here we go again with that Metro Detroit thing.
That's right. There's no Metro Detroit.
So we got to remember that Wayne County in Detroit, Michigan, is the heart of the United States.
Yes, it is.
And that's why they call it Metro Detroit, because guess what? If Metro Detroit fails, so does all the Metro Detroit areas.
That's right.
But if Metro Detroit does good, everybody looks good.
Everybody looks good. That's right.
So we can't lose in Metro Detroit.
No, we can't. We can't. Like you said, that's like an extended branch. The arms of the extended branch. With one tree.
Yes, ma'am.
That's right. It all comes from Detroit. It breaks down to Detroit.
We just got to realize that and give Detroit the respect it deserves when it comes to not only black leaders, but the foundation of when Detroit started and how it started. And not forgetting that we're all immigrants.
That's right.
Okay. I mean, we were forced and brought here, not on our own will. That sounds like an immigrant to me.
That's right. That's right.
You know, when you remove me from the motherland of where the man came from,
yes.
And then it takes you 375 years to say, oh yeah, by the way, the first black person was in Africa. We've known that for over 10,000 years.
Right.
So, you know, it's amazing, and I know we're coming to the end. It's amazing that they said it's going to take over 400 years. But after 400 years, look out, because they might have a plan.
Wow. Oh, that was so quick, wasn't it?
It's over. The 400 years is gone.
That's right. Four centuries.
Ain't that something? That ended up, if I'm not mistaken, about a year and a half ago.
That's horrible. That is just atrocious.
But check it out. Look what happened after the 400 years. Jesus came back and said, okay, time is up.
See,
let me shut it down.
Right. That's right. And certainly he shut it down, like he said, for all creeds, nationalities, and colors. Everything got shut down.
Yes.
See that? And it just brings a forward point. And only since we're on this topic, and we talk about racism from the Caucasian perspective, and even from the Asian perspective, look at how the Asian establishment treats women of color when they go into their nail shops. I've seen some of the most horrible video presentations about treatment of African Americans. But you know something? I said this, and I got a lot of people that did not like what I said. I said, you know something? We want the Caucasians, we want the Asians, the Hispanics to stop being racist against us as African Americans. We need to stop being racist against ourselves. Because we are. The lighter complected, I've heard lighter complected African Americans do the Willie Lynch on a darker complected African American, by calling them black. Then I've heard the darker African American refer to the lighter complected African American as want to be white, excuse my terminology, or mellow yellow. So racism is prevalent within our community, and when the other oppressors, the racist machines see us, the bigots see us treat each other like that, they emulate and duplicate back what they've seen unto us. So they feel like this is a nation of people that don't care about each other, so why should we even attempt to care about them? Look how they treat each other. And that's been another perspective on why the levels of racist violence against African Americans has elevated, because they see the treatment that has occurred within the African American community. When the young men get mad with each other, so they're sitting down at the table talking or having verbal confrontation, they go grab a firearm, a weapon, and they go back and spray the house, spray the block. So when we talk about the persuasion of the others that are implicating violence upon us, what about the violence we implicate to each other?
And that's where race relations start. Race relations start with us, your own race.
Yes.
You know. And until we can sit down at the table, as you mentioned, and break bread and be honest with one another, we can't do anything. Because as you mentioned before, we don't have any money in an African-American community, not only because we don't spend it there, it's because we don't value it.
That's right.
And as far as race relations goes with the Asian, the Mexican, the Latino, or whatever, you can say what you want about some of those cultures, but I can tell you what, they know how to pull together.
Yes, they do.
Have you ever seen an Asian or a Chinese person walking around homeless downtown?
Never.
Have you seen it in your community, in my community? No.
Never.
You're not going to see that, but like you said, we have to learn how to build a relationship with one another because of our race.
Yes.
You know, somebody asked me, you going to vote for him because he's black?
Absolutely.
I know his intelligence. I'm talking about my president, President Barack Obama.
Yes, that's right, because he represents.
It was a no-brainer.
Yes, no-brainer.
But I have to make sure that my perspective is about race relations.
Yes.
And not only from the police department, the fire department, the National Guard, it goes from the president on down to our community.
That's right.
You know, we're talking about the systemic. All of these things are coming out of race relations.
Yes, they are.
You know, the health care, the employment, the way the car that you can't buy.
Yes.
The store you can't shop in, being watched going to the theme park. When you go to certain hotels and you got the money, and then they say, we don't have no beds like that with a jacuzzi in it no more.
Really?
Because they think you're a black person, you're going to tear up the place.
That's what it is. That's right.
So we got to build some race relations within ourselves, within our own communities, and then include other folk.
That's right. That's right.
But we got to be an example of what a what race relations are.
That's right. That's right. And as you being a political leader, I think you're going to set the format, the very, how you say it, crescendo to where we can do that. I'm looking at the possibility, Olu, of you organizing maybe to have a summit where we actually can have a race relations summit.
I'd love to do it, and I don't care where we do it. Just let me know when, and I'll be there.
Oh, definitely, definitely, definitely. We're going to start that grassroots so we can implement that plan. I like that plan that you came out with. It rolls out, and it includes everybody.
Yes, yes, yes. And still we want to hear from everybody who has something to say. Because, again, as we end this campaign and what I'm doing, it's not just political. It belongs to everybody, and everybody needs to be heard.
Yes, yes.
So I'm a silent campaign guy. I return phone calls in 48 hours. And if I don't know the answer, I'll have it within 24 to 48 hours. That's how I work.
That's great. So you're actually connecting and speaking to the people that are calling you. You're not sending someone else to call them and to give information. You are proving yourself as a noteworthy leader because you're connecting directly with those of interest who want to connect with you. That's outstanding. That's outstanding.
Well, I appreciate you and your time. And remember, this comes from not only people like you, but people that I've hung around that hung around you.
Oh, that's so wonderful. Thank you. And I just love you so much. Your enthusiasm, your spark, your fervor, your passion, it just reflects a powerful warrior that's going to get the job done. And if we want to volunteer to help you out into your campaign, just give us your information, Olu, and we can reach out to you and get the job done.
Get the job done.
Well, absolutely. People can call us direct, Sister Phelps, at area code 313-629-8524. And they can send us an email to jababaariorio@aol.com.
Great, great.
And we have people. Sure.
And just write it down for the record. This is who you need to support to help us to build to that level of acceleration in our community where we can stamp out racism and negative race relations. Okay, Olu, shoot it away. Shoot it away. Shoot it away.
Yep, that number again is 313-629-8524. And the email address direct is jababaariorio@aol.com.
Great, great, great. And the elections are coming up on us real quick.
Yeah, it looks like we're doing well as far as the primary goes. We've got some key endorsements, but we're looking to get more. We got more work to do.
Oh, great, great, great. And for the record, everyone, the primary is August 6th. Very good. So make sure you get the right person that represents your passion, your desire, your drive, your inertia in office, because this is where change can happen. We need representatives on the local, on the state, and then on the national level. That's right. There can be focused persons for us to make sure that that positive and much needed change does happen. And this has been a dynamic presentation, a wonderful show with you, Olu. I got to have you back.
Whenever you want me back, you got it. Whenever you need me, I'm coming.
Oh, definitely. See, I like that. That's why we got to make sure that that happens. And before you leave, give us a little remark. Impact everything that has been.
Well, the remark is God is first and God is always in charge. But I definitely want people, when you go vote, you want to make your voice count, vote take your children, take your grandbabies, go and vote.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Because as Olin stated, our ancestors went through extreme oppression and aggression.
You are silencing your own voice. You won't be heard.
Thank
don't
you.
Like the don't local like policy, get out and vote. You don't like the state policy, get out and vote.
Yes.
You don't like the national progression, get out and vote. Your vote is your voice.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, and you have a wonderful afternoon, and we look to speak with you again real soon.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon. Much love to you, my special brother.
We love you too here.
Love you too. Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to tell you something. This is the beginning of the monolithic. As we move forward, to bring forth a plan, a secure plan, that will ensure and assure that our children have a better and brighter future based upon the quality of their character and their integrity as opposed to the complexion of their skin, we are going to mend these severed areas of racial inequality based upon the preconceived notion that the media has reflected and projected regarding African Americans. We will get beyond that because we are worth far more than what we've been given the bargain for. And it starts with us building those positive relations amongst others in our community. Because why? Where there is unity, there is strength, and we've got to restore and revitalize that unity in the community. And let me tell you something else. We, as a nation of people, need to understand the importance of loving and caring for one another and to support one another. And to be kind and outreach to one another as opposed to criticize and ostracize one another. It starts with us because whatever we do to each other, others absorb and they excrement back upon us because they see the way we treat each other. So we want to combat and destroy racism. Let it start right in our own communities. That's right. And let me tell you something else. As African-American citizens in the city of Detroit, the state of Michigan, and around the country, we need to understand some things. All people of other ethnicities, whether they be Caucasian, Asian, Hispanic, are not racist. They are not against people of African-American ethnicity. There's a delegated few that attempt to speak for the masses that are present, and we should not preconceive the notion that all people are the same way. This illness is only inflicted upon a few individuals who walk and live in fear, fear of being overtaken, fear of being overcame, fear of accepting change. And this is another aspect of why these incidents of horrific elevated and increased because of fear. Fear has torment. Fear will continue to torment those who are opening themselves up to it. We must cast aside the fear. We need to communicate with our neighbors and those who don't look like us, those who do not reside in the areas as we do. We need to open up that form of communications so we can get to know each other, so we can dispel these myths that have separated us for far too long. There's only but one race, and that is the human race. It is not divided by color, creed, nor ethnicity. It unites us as one because we were created by one Father, that is the Heavenly Father, who loves us and cares about us all. And the way that we can reform ourselves is to impute this within our minds and within our actions and to walk in a spirit of loving kindness and forgiveness. And to those incidents that have been inflicted upon African Americans in times past, even with the previous, we have to be willing to forgive and move forward. But justice has to be served. We have to make sure that we stand up and stand out and speak out against inequality, despite who inflicted the inequality. We must be heard, but we must be heard in a way of positive and progressive yet productive protest to get the attention of those who may not be well informed as to what impact these incidents have had in the community. But if people don't think we care, these things will continue on. We must be heard, and we must speak out, and we must maintain the fact that we are our brothers and our sisters' keeper. So as we prepare for part two of Race and Racism, a community call to action, you will be given the publicity post as to when this segment will take place and who we will be having our open conversation with, and we're working on those action steps to make sure we do what we can from our perspective and to get the job done. And listen, as you sitting with your family or your extended family, your friends, your coworkers, whoever you may be sitting with, have the open conversation about what we talked about how systemic racism has become a growing and going definite problem in today's society amongst the African-American community, and African-Americans are being impacted by it more severely than any other racial or ethnic group. Talk about some things that you can do from your grassroots level. This is how the momentum begins, but we need to take time and have the conversations, the intimate conversations, the things that may not give you such a positive level of association that needs to be talked out and talked about. Start it at your kitchen table. And from your kitchen table, take it to your front porch and wherever you connect with others. We need to broadspan, and we need to revitalize, and renew a spirit of unity back into our community. And that's where it all starts, to the grassroots level. Yes, the municipalities, yes, they do. They have a great imputation into what happens, into the policies and operational procedures that occur within our community. Yes, they do. The state holds a great level of authoritative measure as it relates to the policies and operational procedures that take place in our communities. And we know that the national level holds a key elementation to the policies and operational procedures that take place within our communities, but it all starts within us. The change starts within us at the grassroots level as citizens. So as we're working on that strategic plan and you want to be involved, don't be afraid to reach up and reach out and connect and communicate with us as we go forward here on the Blog Talk Network, above, beyond the very elementation of where we are, who we are, and what we do. A change must and will come. Have a wonderful, productive, and progressive Saturday. We look forward to speaking with you real soon, and make sure that you reach out to us by way of email. That's right, here at the blogtalkradio.com network. You can always inbox me your comments, your questions, your concerns, and I will address them. The address is right below our page. And don't forget, tune in tomorrow, 12 o'clock p.m., the Manna of Restoration, as we go forward and instruct positive and progressive truth throughout the Holy Scriptures that will innovate and improve the overall quality of your life. Well, have a wonderful afternoon, and we'll see you then. You've got your host with the most from Coast to Coast, the Esquire, Abby A. Felsen, with your modest Denny Maharani, saying have a wonderful afternoon.